another episode of Side Hustle City, the podcast that helps you turn your side hustle into your main hustle, with your hosts, Adam Kaler and Kyle Stevie. All right, everybody, back again, Mr. Kyle Stevie.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
Excellent. Excellent.
He keeps coming back, people. He likes it.
Oh, the people want me back.
The people require it.
Yeah, it's like if they can make it past the first sentence of mine, generally I got some sort of motto or something that they can use.
Something's going good.
But they got to not fall asleep while I'm talking for that first sentence.
No, you're plenty interesting, Kyle. So guess what, guys? We have Mike Sipple with us. And I know Mike through a social group that we belong to down on the river there in one of the towers. And Mike runs Centennial Staffing. Is that what it is?
Centennial Executive Search.
Executive Search. Sounds more important than just staffing, right? So Centennial Executive Search, and he's been doing that for
20 years.
20 years now.
21.
Yeah, 21. Yeah. Wow. And now he's got a new startup, and that's called
Talent Magnet Institute.
Talent Magnet, TMI.
TMI. You never have too much information on leadership.
That's right. There you go. Right. There you go. So, you know, Talent Magnet Institute, and then you've also got Centennial. So how do you balance the two? I know we have a lot of people on here who have startups, and, you know, a lot of times they'll find it challenging to live their normal lives, and then at the same time, you know, be able to run a startup. And those other things, those other jobs may not be other jobs, like in the traditional sense. It could be taking care of kids.
Yeah.
Or it could be, you know, doing anything else. It could be some side hustle stuff. Yeah. You know, people might have three or four jobs. But you deal a lot with executive people, so I'm sure you know a lot about balancing responsibilities. But how does that translate over into what you do now with TMI?
Yeah. So it's learned, right? And it's been learned. I mean, fortunately, because I do see leaders and executives and people who have side hustles or people who are in leadership positions and wait until the point in their career where they can now afford to start something new. But it's been learned to create the balance. So I took over for my dad 7 years ago in our family business. So he's been doing it 45 years.
Oh, wow.
Going on 46. I've been doing it 20, going on 21. So as soon as I moved into a leadership position, we knew that we were going to launch this organization 5.5 years ago. But we needed to get prepared in order to do it. So I very quickly worked to really lift up my team to take over as leaders of our organization, right? Where they can use me for my highest and best use. And ultimately, they can step in and run the organization day to day, week to week, and allow me to do what I'm doing now, which is launching an organization that our clients were clamoring for and we had a vision for to go after it. So, yeah, but it's a grind, and it's worth the grind, right? I mean, most people who have a side hustle or start an organization are doing it because they believe in it, and the work is not the greatest challenge, right? Because we love what we're doing, and I have a supportive family and a super supportive team who knows what swim lanes I'm supposed to operate in, and if I get out of them, they smack my hand and tell me to keep focusing on what I'm supposed to be focusing on.
And I think part of it, a big reason some people are successful and some people are not successful, is because they can understand what they're good at and what they're not good at. And then they can say, hey, look, I know I'm not good at managing people. I'm the idea guy, but I need to find somebody who's good at managing people. I think Henry Ford had a famous quote about that, right? Mm-hmm. Where they said, well, Henry, you don't know much about cars or whatever. He said, yeah, but I can find the right people who do, you know,
right,
something
right.
similar to that.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and that's the advantage coming out of executive search, right? I mean, you know, the ultimate goal of what that business does every day is understands a vision, understands a strategy, and what are the leaders you need in place to help achieve that strategy and vision. So I'm using those skills over in our organization to scale fast, right? To get the right people in place. I believe that organizations, I mean, you can't achieve anything without humans. So my goal is to get the right humans in place to help grow this business.
So are you guys, is it like a headhunter?
Yeah.
A headhunter group?
Yeah. So Centennial gets hired by organizations all over the country We represent companies from 16 different countries, mostly to help with succession planning and building high-performing teams. That's what Centennial's reputation is all about. So, and that's what we've done for, 45 years. I'd certainly say in the last 20, we got even stronger because we've been putting the right pieces in place to help with our continual growth. And, so we're building organizations. We're coming alongside of leaders like yourself and helping you achieve your visions by getting the right people in place to go after it.
And the right people nowadays, I mean, your business has gotten really tricky, I would say, when you start thinking of all the things out there now where, I mean, there's a demand for minority employees, for example. There's certain things you can do and you can't do. I mean, you've really got to dig into some of these executive people.
Oh, yeah.
Into their past, into things that they've done, deep. Things that they say on social media and all this other stuff. I mean, things have gotten crazy in your business, I would say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You have to dig deep or your client will. Right. So our goal is to make sure we know what's going on in someone's past, how they treat people, how they think.
When they were 16 years old, this is what they put on Twitter. Yeah. And now we're going to body slam them and hope they never get another job.
Yeah.
You got to know how people think and behave and what their real values are and what they're going to bring to your client, right? What they're going to bring to the organization.
So like, I'm not very familiar with executive search companies. Outside, I've had a couple of people call, but I wonder, is it more, do you do more filling of positions that are about to come open? Like, we know this guy's retiring or this guy's going to transition to this phase or this guy's been offered to go to a competitor. He's heading that way. He's given us 2 weeks to get ready. Or are you also helping build different verticals inside of an organization?
Yeah. So we hope to not have to work with clients who are only 2 weeks out from a replacement, like you just mentioned. But our goal is to work with organizations and leaders who see the future, right, as much as they can, and they're planning for it. So succession planning. We know that you're going to retire in 2.5 years. We need to get our organization ready for that, and then we need to start working on, maybe 6 months out, how to help that organization find the next CEO.
So it's not exactly it may not be you going outside of the organization itself and recruiting like people think of when they think of headhunters. Do you actually help them with inside, like, okay, I want to keep my succession inside of the company that I created. Here's the profile that I have for people that I think would be good, but I don't want to screw this up. Can you help me out with?
So that would be the talent magnet side.
Okay.
Right. So the search firm would help you compare outside talent to inside talent. Right, for a search. But if you say we've got great people, we need to invest in them, build them up, help figure out the long-term organizational strategy, work on their leadership development, help them develop their own people, that's what Talent Magnet Institute was designed to do.
Okay.
And that's really what birthed the idea, right? So for those listening, strategic planning is critically important. 8 years ago, our family and our business went into a very deep cycle of strategic planning. This was before I took over as president. And in that that first strategic plan that we did, that was really a strategic plan, right? I mean, it had teeth to it. There was one bullet point that said, deliver more value to A clients, and it had an asterisk. And on that one pager, every meeting we would have for strategic planning, we would listen between meetings what services we heard clients clamoring for, what pain we heard them bringing up. And at the bottom of that one pager, we would add next to the asterisk notation what those services were. Many of those services are now being provided by the Talent Magnet Institute.
Smart.
And outside of that, we also, back in 2014, I gave my first talk on becoming a talent magnet in Tempe, Arizona. That brand is now our brand, right? Talent Magnet Institute, Talent Magnet Certified. Becoming a talent magnet is our proprietary technology and structure of all of our e-learning platform. But that happened in 2014. Adam, right before we started talking this week, I had a client up in Akron say 6 and a half years ago was when I started my journey on culture. He started his journey on culture from the presentation I made in Tempe, Arizona on culture and becoming a talent magnet, right? So those little indications that we were onto something special, and now to look forward 6 years and say, okay, you know, December 2019, we spun Talent Magnet out as its own C Corp with its own board of directors, its own outside investors. It takes a while, right? Be patient with yourself. I'm not a very patient person, but you know, it took me 15 years to figure that out, that patience matters and other smarter people are right. And so that's how we got to where we are today, is doing a ton of Centennial's all about listening to the client and really getting to know what's holding them back.
Something you said there, you now,
culture.
Well, not culture. And that you picked up on that. But so if I want to do a startup, right? A lot of times what happens is I work a 9-to-5 job and I see inefficiencies and I see opportunity, hopefully. I see inefficiencies, and then my brain immediately switches to, okay, how can I create a product or a service that handles these inefficiencies, and is there money there? Is there money to be made there? It sounds like you kind of did that with your own company because, I mean, you know, Centennial is your 9-to-5.
Yeah.
But you're like, hey, let's learn from our customers. Let's figure out what they like doing with us.
Yeah.
And you built a separate product. Your side hustle is what you're doing now.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's my dad's an innovator, right? A very calm, collected innovator. He's always thinking about the future.
Mm.
Almost to the point, if Dad, you're going to listen to this, like exhaustion. Like he's always thinking future focused. And because of that, was always challenging his team to think about the future, right? So we were essentially incubating a startup inside our own organization. I mean, that's what we did.
Which is a lot of companies struggle with that. Big companies, and we talked a little bit about this, especially places, Cincinnati, Midwest, very conservative mindset, you know. These companies, they want to be innovators, right? They leverage the Cincy startup community. And I'm sure this is in a lot of other towns too, not just Cincinnati, but your corporate companies,
they buy it. They purchase it and hope to God that they can implement it and integrate it into their corporate structure, and that it'll fit into, you know, their culture. It'll fit into their operations seamlessly.
But does it, right? Like, yeah.
Look at General Electric. How many different divisions have they had to sell off for different things to get back into their core competencies?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what you could do. That's the risk you run as a company, is you start getting too far away from your core competencies because you're out here trying to innovate. But the problem is these people who innovated outside of your company, now you're bringing them into this 9-to-5 corporate culture with all these weird rules and these heavy HR departments and all this other stuff that they have to do. And then there's a ceiling as to it for their thinking, right? They, you know, when they're not in that corporate culture, they can be as imaginative as they want, but then they feel like, oh, well, I can't do this because of this, or there's this roadblock, or there's this, I'm not allowed to step outside of my role into this other role because I got to live in this box that they've created for me. So, in Mike, you know, you and I were talking about this a little bit before. What are those challenges, and why do you think that happens inside of these companies?
Yeah, I mean, one, we talk about intrapreneur a lot, intrapreneurs, and creating an environment that allows people to thrive on creativity, challenge, talk to customers about things that they need, not just what you're providing, right? So a search firm could just as easily start a staffing firm, right? We don't do staffing. We decided that what we do best is serve the leaders, right? So what are the things that the leaders are dealing with that we hear them continually come to us and ask for guidance and advice?
Yes.
And, so that was a big deal. Like, what do we want to do? It's easier just to launch a staffing firm as a shoot off of an executive search firm. But what we say in our world is we're so ingrained in that leadership that our focus is how do we help those leaders serve their people even better, right? How do you bring out the greatest good of all people? What does inclusive and equitable cultures really look like? Like, let's serve in that capacity, because there's plenty of staffing firms. I have a lot of friends who own them and run them and lead them, and I love you all. But our goal is, like, we want to help you achieve your strategy and vision. And if there's not clarity there, let's create the infrastructure and put the pieces in place to help you get there and help you operationalize what you're trying to achieve. So that's where we're focused in our ecosystem. And, you know, when I say we, that's what the Talent Magnet Institute does as a business partner of Centennial, but it's not an exclusive relationship with Centennial because we're its own, you know, we're our own entity. I do serve in both organizations. So I am the president of our search firm and CEO and co-founder with my dad of the Talent Magnet Institute. And so again, in one organization, I'm providing strategy, connections, and that's what I do. That's what I do for the search firm now. Everything else is ran by my professional leadership team.
And I'm guessing the reason you don't wrap those two together is because the second one, not Centennial, is more of a startup that can scale on its own.
That's right.
And be sold. With Centennial, you know, you guys have had that for 45 years, and it is what it is. And if it was going to scale, it would have probably scaled by now to, right. You know, a huge company. But now you're more on kind of like the software side of things.
That's right.
Where you can build a scalable business that someone will find attractive someday and may want to purchase that and wrap that into something that they're doing.
That's correct.
Well, just from the human element too, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it sounds like the Magnet Institute is more along the lines of we're going to cultivate leadership that executives that we know are going to want to hire. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're investing in and building up either people they already have internally that they can be that can promote, or folks who just become better people leaders. Right.
Right. Yeah, and so if you pigeonhole it just in the openings that Centennial has, then correct. You've got a backlog, yeah. And it's a bottleneck effect where people are going to be like, well, screw that. Why do I want to go there if I'm 18th yeah. in line to get hired? Nobody's getting hired out of there.
That's right.
This way, you guys have expanded your hireability, I guess, for lack of a yep. better term, for the, we'll call them students, pupils, whatever. And now it's more enticing. Centennial can't get me in. They have so many different connections throughout their business relationships that I have the net has been cast so broadly that I have much better chance, you know, becoming an executive at a certain company with their backing than I would if I was just, you know, on glass ceilings, whatever the hell kind of website you're on.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's why I think it's such an awesome idea to keep it separate. You're right. They can sell it and it's going to make it a lot cleaner, but also it gives students more incentive to participate if they're not inside of that organization that's contracted on, but you're also able to, you know, it's more enticing for them to be there just because they know that if it doesn't happen with Centennial, then I can go and I can find something else.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, Centennial is a boutique executive search firm, right? So a really good year. And when I meet, kind of framing up boutique typically means you're highly specialized and focused in a few key things, and that's all you do. And all we do is succession planning and build high performing teams. We don't do that. You know, we have 16 associates. We're not doing that with thousands of employers every year. If we have 45 to 50 placements in a year, we've had a fantastic year. And there's, you know, 15, 20,000 people who apply for jobs every 6 months for our search firm, right?
Wow.
So the other goal, you know, as we like to say, the other 95% was a comment that was phrased in a lot of our strategic planning many years ago. You know, let's just say we only touch 5% of our database. And when I say touch, they're clients, they're candidates who go into a step of an interview process, their placements, their affiliates, their associates, their advisors. The other 95% are going to be people leaders someplace else. How do we serve the other 95%? Right. Mm. So by building a technology platform, a digital leadership platform that provides learning, development, that disrupts the courses, right? So you think, oh, I'm going to go out and I'm going to attend a conference and I'm going to go there for 3 days and I'm going to learn a lot. How many of us come back from that conference and by next Friday forget what in the world we just covered? And until you run across your notes 5 years later and say, oh, that was a really inspiring
conference. I remember that. Right? Yeah, right.
The same thing with 3 to 6 month learning resources. I mean, they're awesome, right? And roundtable programs are awesome. I've participated in a bunch. But they're events, and they come to an end, right? So what we're trying to do is build a tech platform that leaders want to subscribe to and have in their pocket, right? And that they're constantly getting leadership hacks and ways to be a better human with the people you employ this afternoon, right? So we've built resources, tons of IP that our members get to immediately take advantage of.
When this stuff is time sensitive. Yes. I mean, there's issues that have come up in the last year during the election. There's been situations arise. If you're a leader, you have hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people underneath you. Some of your staff, you know, probably in some of these communities, marginalized communities, you need to know how to address these situations. Right. You're not from one of these, you know, communities. Yeah. You probably don't know the first thing about what they're dealing with, right? You may have some idea, but that is a situation that when you're talking, these are the types of things I'm thinking of. Like if I was a leader of 5,000 people and a big chunk of my staff were going through something at that moment, how do I address that?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So on our platform, one, we have kind of our customer service team, right? Our leadership concierges, right? Like you say, hey, I need that. We deploy you right to the resource. You're surrounded by coaches and advisors who connect you with the right things. But most of those things are being built real time on our platform. So unlike an LMS that gets dated, we're constantly curating the right tools that we're hearing both from direct response as well as our technology and diagnostic platform that every member's participating in, right? And every piece of data that we learn helps us serve you even more effective, meaning that, you know, how many employees do you have? When are your one-to-ones? When are your strategy? What's your strategy cycles? What's your budgeting cycles? Every time we learn that, we know enough about business to know what you should be focused on right now, right? The other thing is that many work-related development programs are work-related. We believe the way that you win is through relationships, work, community, and life. And too many leaders, I mean, we've heard, right, mental health problems, drug addictions, suicide in the executive ranks is sure. Substantial. We've all had, I mean, I know I've had a dear friend who took his life in 2019. That loneliness piece of executive leadership and even entrepreneurship, right? You may only have 4 employees, but who in the world do you turn to for guidance and wisdom? We're trying to build that in our, call it our tech stack. Like that's what we're serving. Because leaders are humans too, and so are all the people around us that all come with their own story. And how do you bring your whole self, and what does that look like? You know, well, you learn the whole body of solution around becoming a talent magnet. What does it look like, both for yourself and those around you? So we're trying to bring more than just work success, right? And trying to help you be successful on our platform. We care about the members. So bringing that humanity to leadership development, walking with you in the journey. And, you know, essentially you sign up with a subscription, a monthly subscription, or pay your annual fee. The other thing we've done is to make it leadership development's not accessible to many people, right? So you just mentioned that, you know, people come from all walks of life. Not every company provides development to their people leaders. And we're trying to create some accessibility in that, which gives us, as a tech startup, scale, right? We get more members on our platform, but it also helps us achieve one of our values of making leadership development accessible to employees.
Well, one thing we do, I'm on the board of Adopt-A-Class, and we have 200 schools, I think, that we go into and volunteer. So I have 2 schools that I've gone into, and one of them's Rothenburg Elementary and Over the Rhine, and the other one was Euler School in my old neighborhood in Price Hill. And one of the things that you do is you go in, and these kids are in urban schools, at-risk schools, right? And we try to get corporate partners who are willing to give us $500 a year, which is super cheap, but they take their young leaders, they're up-and-comers, right? Many of them probably didn't grow up in a poor urban environment, right? They had no exposure to that. We send them into the schools. They interact with the kids. They're an adult figure that cares about these kids and shows them different things. We have folks from Proctor go in, show the kids how to make soap, fun activities that show the kids there's another adult figure here who is showing me how to do something, exposing me to a potential career or something that I could go into, right? But the hope is also that these young leaders get something out of that interaction as well.
Sure.
And you know, the folks at corporate and P&G who, you know, are in HR who signed these people up for this thing, that's the hope that they have as well. And it sounds a lot like you're touching on some things that I think, you know, I'd like to be involved in, because as a corporate entity, a lot of times you think numbers, right? You think, are we hitting our numbers? Are we doing this? Are we doing that? Are we doing what we need to do? You think very internally, right? Everything, but you're part of a community.
That's right.
You're part of a community. Your future employees don't have to come from Boston. They don't have to come from London. You know, you don't have to find your next CEO in LA or at Berkeley or in San Francisco or wherever. These kids, you know, that aren't graduating high school, these kids that, you know, are dropping out of college but are from Cincinnati, right? Or from whatever community you're from, those could be your potential next leaders.
Absolutely.
But as a corporate, you know, we rely, I think, too much on the government to solve these problems. But we need like the Procter & Gamble's of the world. We need the Kroger of the world to care about the communities that they're in. And they do in many cases. But what do you see? What do you see happening? Like, what has changed? You've been doing this for 20 years with these leaders. What has changed, and are they waking up to these things?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so one of the things that we really think, we need more middle and small market companies to realize that there's a lot that goes on outside their four walls, right? And one of the things I share a lot with leaders and business owners, like, think about your employee base, right? How many individuals who are on the front line creating the great product, providing the great service look nothing like you, right? Because that's the community you're in, and that's who you're employing. So you need to care about that, right? So we equip our leaders to think about our members, to think about these things, right? That if you're in a community as a business, the great example I like to use, guys, that if you're in a company, there's a school somewhere around you, no matter where you are, right? What are you doing with that, right? How are you serving? And of course, from an employee engagement perspective, you may think, oh, we're going to go help serve them. But anyone who's been involved in any projects like Adopt a Class know how much they get fed.
Yes.
Right. So we're trying to equip leaders to think about that. Like, let's just, you know, employee engagement isn't just about the benefits you're providing. It's about the way you're leading, the opportunities you're providing to your employees to really become better people. Right. So taking those steps. And yes, companies are focused on it. I mean, we know from this, our community that we live in Greater Cincinnati, that the big corporate organizations, you know, they have to be involved socially. Many of the privately held and small businesses don't have to be involved socially. We're trying to get them to recognize the power when they do, right?
That's a really good point.
And, and train up, Kevin, to, you know, the next generation employees. How do we get people thinking that, hey, if I move on from here, right? I started here as a sales rep. I'm a sales manager. In order for me to become VP, I may have to move on. We all should be wanting to develop our people to have a positive experience with our organization, right? So they can be brand ambassadors, not detractors. And also look back and say, that organization gave me so much. I recommend anybody start there as an employee.
Well, Kyle's spoiled because he works at an unbelievable organization that just continues to grow and is in the supply chain logistics space. And as you know, here we are in Cincinnati, probably I would consider it the hub of supply chain logistics, or has the potential to be the hub of supply chain logistics in America.
Well, it's because they all spun off of us.
A lot of them. Yeah.
I mean, I know 10 guys that sat out non-competes and started their own thing. I mean, and they grew, you know, mid-sized to large companies, and they've had a lot of success, and it was based off of, you know, what they learned with us.
But you got a great example of a founder who is a great leader and leads by example.
Yes.
Still, and what are the traits that you see? Like, I mean, you've been there since practically, you know, since the beginning of the company, since the early days of the company. Before anybody, it was a household name.
Yeah, I was there 7 years after they were founded. I was part of the boom, I guess, for the hiring boom. I was the very beginning of that. Then we hired a bunch of guys out of Miami after the I guess May when they graduated 2004. And I would say that the thing that we have with Ken and then with Carrie coming on is that it's a lot of walk to walk and talk to talk with those guys. There's no like we were talking about this the other day. You know, you have these leaders when you're creating culture. When you're creating culture, it's going to be what your leader represents or presents to the crowd. People aren't stupid; they can see through bullshit. They know that this guy is going to tell me to work hard and make 100 calls a day, and then he's going to go off at Friday at 2 p.m. and he's going to go golf, and then on Monday he might, you know, go golf again. Wednesday he may do a happy hour. Saturday, Sunday, I'm not going to be able to get a hold of him, and then 3 weeks out of every quarter, he's going to be at his beach house or something like that. People see through that. They're like, why am I working this hard so that you can have this playboy lifestyle? With Ken and Carrie, it was, we're going to outwork you. If you're not putting up your numbers, it's not going to be because of anything other than you just didn't do it. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Now, we've caught heat on it. You know, you can hear people call it a chop shop and everything like that because it's entry-level sales. And sometimes you work your butt off and you don't get lucky. Sometimes you get lucky, you didn't work your butt off, and it catches up with you in the end.
Mm.
But in terms of the culture, it was always from top down, we're working harder than you are. Why? And so that was a thing where nobody could look once Ken left you know, when he was talking to the company as a whole in the early days when it was just us and it was him before work. Nobody could look at him and say, that guy's full of crap. Everybody's like, oh, we better start busting tail. We're not working hard enough because he's here at 4 o'clock in the morning or he's up at 5 o'clock in the morning sending emails. He's here on Saturdays. He's, you know, he's here. So there's no reason that we're not mentally here too, because he could have walked away. By the time I was there, he could have walked away from it, sold it, and been a multi-millionaire and never have to work a day in his life again. But he didn't. He had the ambition that we're going to be the biggest thing that this country's ever seen. And so every year we creep closer and closer to C.H. Robinson, who's the biggest, every year. And it's based off of the fact that it's a culture of just working for achievement.
But, okay, so he obviously has more to gain from working hard than the average employee. And this is another thing I want to bring up. It's not just, you know, what's happened during the election and the inequality in business and things like that. But it's also this anti-capitalism mindset, right? But people look at how much money these CEOs are making. And you know, you deal with some of these types of folks. They're making $5-6 million a year, maybe more, and then they get more and more money. And then you've got these guys down at the bottom that are, they think they're working just as hard, right? Hey, I'm here for 12 hours a day doing whatever I do, and I'm making $50,000 a year. So how do these leaders cope with that, or how do they address that?
So, and I'll share how I address it, right? Like what I see from the angle that we're in, and what you were just sharing about culture. We like to say culture shows up when the leader leaves the room, right? Mm-hmm. So Ken and Carrie were setting a tone that people believed in, so that when they left the room, those who believed in it aligned to it and worked just as hard. You know, the other dynamic real quickly, Adam, before I get into your direct question, it's just some thought that came from what was just shared. The other dynamic with your organization is people, you said, you know, the industry has spun out of your organization, right? Like people have went and decided. So what's the legacy that you left? You trained them, you equipped them. Most people, even if they left on not the best terms, would say, but I learned everything I know from that organization.
Yes.
I guarantee, right? If you go in there, I guarantee if you go in almost every single one of those offices that spun off of us, you're going to see the same. You're going to see the same setup in terms of desks. Mm-hmm. You're going to see the same setup in terms of help.
Yeah.
For your account, you're probably going to see something very, very similar in terms of the database that they use and the screen. What your interface looks like. Some guys don't do the same structure we do in terms of operations. They've split their departments different ways. Mm-hmm. But it's still the same concept.
Yeah. So the legacy that you're living isn't just that you're creeping up to be number one. That you've really created an industry right?
Oh, well, and then on top of that, like
Adam was saying, Cincinnati has become the place for third-party transportation. Yeah, it is.
And there's a reason for that.
There is a reason for that. But, I mean, Ken, even if I left, right, I was his all-star guy, right? I say, hey, man, I'm leaving. I'm starting another firm, you know, similar to you guys, competing, whatever. You can't even be mad. You helped that person to do that. Like, it's like one day you look back and you're like, yeah, man, that guy spun out and he competed against me. I'm happy that that happened. I'm not mad that he, you know, sat out his non-compete and started another company. He learned that here. Mm-hmm. And he created 50 new jobs. Mm-hmm. This guy over here created 250 new jobs. This person, you built that ecosystem. Mm-hmm. You should be super proud of that.
Yeah, the ripple effect's substantial. So, Adam, the question that you asked regarding compensation, executive suicides is a very high rate, right? Career length for CEOs of large publicly traded companies, life expectancy in that, it's like going to the NFL. The reason why you get paid a ton of money is because you were under the pressure of the world that only you can handle for so long, right? So if you look at their career expectancy, it's not like they get paid, you know, $35 million for 40 years, right? That might only be for a short season of time, but let's
not everybody's Jack Welch.
Yeah. And the companies that they're running are hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, right? With tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of employees, the pressure of that role can never be underestimated, right? And, you know, so there's a reason why people get paid really good money. Now, are there people who abuse it? Certainly. But how many philanthropists are in our world because of the money that they made from those organizations? And how many continually give back while they're making the dollars that they're making?
Sure.
How many go fund startups? How many, have private planes? Yes. But how many of them have used their planes for good on when somebody's in a healthcare emergency? Or, I mean, I can give you countless examples of how people who do really well, they also work their ass off.
Well, nobody wants to talk about the good things. Everybody, the story is not the good things, right? So, the story is the negative things, right?
Well, I think you get it from both sides too. So like Fox News is never going to talk to a CEO about, well, what about all these guys that, you know, do you really need to make $30 million a year? And CNN's not going to go to the people who are making $35,000 a year, not doing a damn thing, and saying, do you really want to have a life where as soon as you take it, you're responsible for all your coworkers and every other division in this company? And if it goes wrong, then you're the one that's in the media. You're the one that's in the front. Some people would say for $35 million a year, hell yeah, sign me up. Other people would take a step back and say, I don't know if I want that responsibility. And then you take into account, like, if you got to that point, it is your reputation. And as a CEO, I'm assuming that if you were to leave one company on a high note like Jack Welch, then you're going to be sought after by other companies.
Sure.
But if you're there when a corporation nose bombs,
you're done.
Your career's over.
Yeah. So think about the for anyone who would say, oh, that's ridiculous, you know, I could do that, living the life of a CEO of tens of thousands of employees for a week, and you might cry uncle, right? The other dynamic, to your point, life expectancy and that job, not just from a human perspective, but from a career longevity standpoint, you know, there's typically incentive tied to their comp. There's a reason why they're making bank, because they're hitting their objectives and goals, right? Those that don't, you know, your reputation's gone. It's no different than private equity. You have a few great private equity turns, you've got a career path for the rest of your life, right? Because you know how to create profitability and turn a company and put the right team and sell. If you have a failure, you'll never get hired in private equity again. I mean, that's just the way that it works, right? So, now again, yes, what can we do to give back? We want to create humans who can do well for themselves, but also ensure they're doing everything possible to take care of the people that they're responsible for.
Well, I think giving back too, part of it would be education, and not like classroom education, but just explanation of what's expected from executives. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people that are at the lower levels, they don't know. All they see are nice cars and nice suits. They don't understand everything that goes into it.
Well,
and I think, and I'll be honest with you, I think a lot of times when you get into the executive world, you forget what kind of hard scrabble life you came up from.
Sure.
So I think that the some sort of connect, that's a good thing about TQL is that we're still so young. There's a lot of connectivity between guys in the executive and guys that are still in sales. If I needed to email one of the guys that I started with who's an executive now, I'll get a reply back in a short time, and it won't be like hostile. It'll be friendly, and it'll be, you know, we'll have a conversation. Mm-hmm. I think that like P&G, you can't do that. Kroger, you can't do that. All these other places, you can't do it. So it'd be nice to have that interconnectivity. Maybe they could do it off of your platform, mm-hmm. where there's interconnectivity. Like this is what it's like a day in the life of.
Yeah. 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 A couple of the organizations you just mentioned are clients. And one of the things that it's also about the leader, right? So I could send a text message right now and get to a number three person at Kroger. He would respond within seconds because he's that kind of leader, right? And he came from Procter and he was there. He did that too. But it's the individuals that are involved. I mean, there's organizations in this region that have great reputations, and then a bad CEO comes in who's toxic, who treats everybody not the way that the other people would want to be treated, and it just lowers the brand reputation. Then the next CEO comes in, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I want to go there.
How right? do you get away with that even? I mean, if you're toxic and you come in, I mean, you just bully people and they're scared of you?
There's certain cultures that like, well, this is how we do it, and go find something else. I encourage people to go find something else, right? If you're in an environment where there's a fear and a culture of toxicity, you do not deserve that, right? And again, all of these things that I'm sharing are things we're trying to equip people with. Like, you know, one, don't do that. So we like to say we're looking for psychographic focus with our clients, not demographic. We're looking for people who are already in the mindset of I want to invest in myself and others. I want to help others bring out their greatest good. I want to help people feel valued, heard, and understood. I understand that corporate culture is really made up of the thousands and thousands of interactions my people have each and every day. That's what defines who and what they experience. So we're trying to find people that in the psychographic focus are already thinking about that, right? Because, you know, you could spend your wheels trying to change someone's opinion of themselves and how they treat people. And I don't have time for that, right? So, but there are organizations that are like that. And if you're there, I mean, it's time to move on, right? If you are in a place where you go home every night in a bad place and you're miserable, it is not worth it. There are too many opportunities out there to go find, and it's time to start opening up some doors.
Right? Should more companies allow their employees to be entrepreneurs? Should they hold on to them so tight and keep them so busy that they don't have time to think about anything else? Or should they encourage, like TQL doesn't really encourage it, but you've had a lot of people spin out of there and start something.
Oh yeah. I don't want this to get misconstrued. No, they make it difficult. I mean, because there's potential for IP theft and
For all that.
So they make sure that they're secured there. Whether they take pride in some of these guys, if they've done it the right way, I have no idea. I've never talked to him about it, but
yeah.
But my point is, it's going to happen, right? And if you're, are you going to stand in front of that and try to do everything you can to keep this person from being who they could potentially be, and start a company that helps the community?
Yeah.
Because you want to hold people back and keep them in your business, right?
Sure.
Or should you create a space that allows people to think outside the box? People to come together that work together and potentially do something else that could benefit your company.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the, you know, we talk a lot about this with the word retention, right? So some organizations and some leaders, and to be frank, for many years I did, I got a learning lesson. but the think retention is the magic answer. My learning lesson came from me actually understanding why my dad every year would ask his employees, hey, is this what you want to be doing at the end of next year? Right. And I like was that. Like, that is the weirdest question. I mean, we've had some fantastic people leave our organization and it's like, why didn't we hold it? Like, that was weird. Why'd you ask? Why'd you encourage her to go move on? Why did you encourage him to go start a church in New York City? Right. And it's like, well, because that's what he wanted to do next. So I'm going to stand here and prop them up as much as possible to help them do that. I think it's abnormal. I mean, I think my dad is abnormal in many, many great ways. But we take that to heart because guess what you do? You allow them to flourish. You allow them. So the entrepreneur, I want my people to be the most innovative they can be. I want them to be the most entrepreneurial they can be inside our organization to serve the customer. But most importantly, I want them to know and feel like they're becoming the best they can be. And if they can stay with the organization, awesome. If they say at some point it's time to go check another chapter, then I'm not providing them the challenge that's going to allow them to continue to grow and they're going to move on. And I'm going to try to be their advocates when they do that.
He said earlier in this podcast, you said entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. I love that. Like, I've never heard that term before. Mm-hmm. And to me, my vision of entrepreneurial is I allow my employees to be my research and development department in that, in whatever field that they're working in, whatever section of the company they're working in. I don't know what kind of rewards you give employees for that. If it's just, you just allow them to do it. And the self-reward is for having accomplished something and adding value to the organization you're working for. That's up to whoever owns their company. But I think that's amazing, is that that idea that you're here, we employ you, you know, W-2 comes through here, but this is entrepreneurial. Create your own method, create your own way of doing this job, this role, knowing that these are the guidelines that we work in as an organization. This is our culture. This is our core competency. This is what we want to stick around. Don't go out into the weeds if you're pushing pharmaceuticals. We want you to be entrepreneurial inside of connecting with clients, connecting with maybe some other people inside of our organization to make, you know, combination sales, whatever it is. We don't want you to be out there selling your lawn service at the same time. That's not the entrepreneurial type. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that's amazing.
Yeah. But I mean, you got a lot of people. I mean, we live in a society of capitalism, right? And all these businesses enjoy all the benefits of living in this society and being capitalistic. But inside their own organization, they run that place like they're Joseph Stalin, right? You're here. Here's your role. You're stuck in this little, this is what you do every day when you come here.
Yeah, and most business owners have multiple streams of income,
yes. Right?
Like, what is our goal? To have, you know, some people say four, some people say seven streams of income by the time you're 40, or if you can do it earlier, awesome, right? And I know a lot of your listeners here, that's what we're all trying to do, right? That's why we're in your Facebook group. That's why we're following your podcast.
That's right.
And that's what, you know, even me, right? We've bought real estate in the last couple of years. We have a fellow co-working business that's a little boutique with boardroom rentals and things like that.
You guys
that.
Run Newport and I'm over here in Covington.
That's right. And, but why wouldn't we, to your point, as a business owner, why wouldn't I want my employees to have some of those same opportunities, right? So if they came to me and said, hey, I want to start a lawn care business, but I want to be the backer. I've got a friend who's going to run it. Are you okay with that? We should be okay with that.
Exactly.
Just try, you know, please don't let it disrupt your job, but judge me by performance, not by how much time I'm in the office, right? And in a remote world that we're being forced into and that we've moved into, more and more people are going to have flexibility. You know, maybe you even say, hey, we want to, you know, we have a social cause. We're going to start a nonprofit here in our organization. And companies do this, and we're going to spend one leader out to go run it for us. And we're going to fund it because it's going to create impact. That happens quite a bit, maybe more than is highlighted, because I don't think it's sexy. I don't think people want to, you know, people are afraid. I'm going to scarcity mentality. I want to hold on to my people. How about you just bring out the greatest good of your people, help them flourish. If they do leave, make sure they're ambassadors for your brand and are going to tell people, hey, you got to go there. That's where I started my career. That's where I got my big lift. That's where I went from director to C-suite.
Well, and I think, too, in a perfect world, you've got, you know, there was a time in America when, you know, one person could have stayed home with the kids and everything was fine. One person could go out and work and bring in plenty of money. They had a pension. You know, the company wasn't going to fire them. You know, they after they got done, they got their pension. You could move to Florida. Everything was cool. Now you have to almost have two people in that household working. That's where it went to, right? Well, now it's both people have to be working, but they also need side hustles, right? And companies over time have gotten less and less loyal, right? And I think people have started to feel like cattle almost. They're numbers in these companies. There's no like personal, hey, Bob, how's it going? Yeah, how are your kids and your family? That doesn't exist anymore. You come in, you sit down in front of your little computer and your little workstation, and you're expendable, right? People know this. I just don't know if leadership knows this, right? So why would me as a leader, right, understanding that these people have to make money and have to earn a living, and I could let them go at any time. I might have to let an entire department go. I know this as a leader. It's hard. It's one of the hardest things to do as a leader, let people go. But if I do that and they have no backup income and they have no side hustle and I've prevented them from having that, you should be ashamed of myself. I mean, honestly, like if I'm going to keep them from like what you said, hey, if you want to invest in your friends, great, you know, just don't let it interfere with your business. That's the way to say it, right? It's not, no, you work for us.
See,
and
I've been very, very lucky in terms of what I've been able to do. So I was able to go to law school and Ken wrote a letter of recommendation for me. You know, we did the real estate thing in Fort Thomas. Like I was the money behind it, but I didn't swing a hammer or anything like that. But it was the same idea. It wasn't, what the hell are you doing? Why are you getting distracted? It was those guys went with me to happy hour. People in the executive group have gone there for dinner. Like it's that kind of mentality. I showed them what we're doing in Covington. It wasn't, are you doing another one? It is, man, it's going to look awesome when it's finished. Can't wait to go have a beer there. Like, so they're still that, like to your point, it's, you know, if my numbers suffered, then sure. I would be some serious talking to, and I would need to probably quit the podcast.
But your boss is an entrepreneurial leader.
Yes.
Some of the people you put in place, these are people who they went to the right schools, right? They went to the right MBA, they got the right MBA, top 10 MBA, right? They've gone down the corporate path, right? The schooling, education, corporate path. Yeah. And they may not have the same openness to entrepreneurship as somebody like Ken, who's like, I'd be a hypocrite. If I didn't let this person go out and do this, I'm a hypocrite. Why am I trying to hold on to this person? I was able to build this business, and I'm successful because I was able to be an entrepreneur. Well, who am I to tell this other person you can't do this now? Yeah.
I would say there are people, though, who go through the traditional path who are a little bit more, you know, I'll use the word woke to like, this is the new world. This is the world we're living in, right? And people who understand that, again, if I'm going to keep someone, I want them to be happy. And if they're, I mean, I do know people who have a grind job, but it's in a little bit of autopilot because it's actually helping them do the other things they enjoy most, right? And setting their family up for success while they're doing other initiatives or startups or ideas or funding things to have other streams of income. But, you know, we as leaders need to let's just focus on what do our people want? What are their dreams and goals? What are their aspirations? And you help me accomplish what we're going to accomplish with this organization. And then you help me do that. I'll help you do yours.
Well, right? And I think I'm very involved in the startup community. And one of the things that I've heard is that entrepreneurs in Cincinnati, and it's probably the case everywhere, but we have a great, you know, Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 community here. I mean, we're blessed in this city to have such large companies for the size market we're in and where we're at in the country. But the cushy 9-to-5 career job at the big corporate keeps people a lot of times from pushing themselves harder because when you're an entrepreneur, you know how hard it is. And we talked about this before the show. You know how hard it is to be an entrepreneur, right? Why work hard and why go through that when you could just easily just, you know, you could be bought out at the stage you're at. Don't scale up and be a unicorn. You know, we'll buy you for $300,000. We'll pay you $150,000 a year. Come work here. So a lot of times the startup community and the corporate community are at odds. And sometimes there's not a lot you could do about it because, you know, what do you do about these people wanting the security of a high paying job?
Yeah, there's some of, I mean, you're wired for it and it's going to take more than 300,000 of it. 300 million, we'll talk at them. But there's people who are wired for it, right? So, I mean, my grandfather was an entrepreneur who worked in the trucking industry. And, you know, on the side, when he got home, he was flipping houses and building things. And, you know, that's what he did, right? So yes, I come from a lot of privilege and I come from a multi-generational entrepreneur family on my dad's side. So I'm wired for it. I mean, I'm definitely wired for it. I was wired for it when I was a kindergartner. The stuff I did in kindergarten class, making stuff and building stuff.
Selling candy. Sold some candy when I was a kid.
Making bracelets, you know.
Yeah, bracelets. Yeah, anything. Remember those?
But, you know, yeah, and there are some who just want to work their 9 to 5 and that's it, right? Because they want to coach or they want to do something else with their time. Awesome. But we need creativity. We need intrapreneurs that are inside, that are creating things inside our organizations too. So, and that's your audience, right? That's who we're speaking to. Those who have that bug, they're trying to figure it out. I know I want to do something. You can do it and you should do it. And if you're in an environment who's like absolutely not and you're wired for it, then you need to go find something else.
That's a good point.
I want to say, I forgot about this and I feel bad I forgot about this, but we used to have meetings and we still have an idea. We're just so big right now, I can't do it. But we have idea box and like, I'll be damned if those ideas don't get put into the load to our program to manage loads or into how our day to day goes or like that was what's pretty evident to me, right? Is that like there's one thing about telling people to be creative and think outside the box, and then when they give you an idea, you just kind of it was good try, buddy. There's another one when you see it's being adopted by, like, it might not be your idea, but you knew someone's, hey, I put this in the idea box, and all of a sudden it works, and you're like, holy shit, they're listening. Mm-hmm. Like, that makes all the difference in the world. So it's not just doing it. It's, like, having your employees see that you are doing it.
Yeah, living it out, taking action.
Yeah, but think about that. So, Mike, right now, what are you trying to do? You've got this startup. You're trying to find people to adopt your product, right? The greatest incubate inside of the company you work at. Let the company you work for be your first customer. That's the ideal situation. Because right now you're building something, you're outside of the Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 companies that you want to go after. But if I'm already in one of those companies and I come up with a great idea, I should feel comfortable going to my higher ups and saying, look, I did this thing. I need a corporate partner. I know I work for you, but I'm trying to do this thing. Do you guys want to use this? And if they find it valuable, sure, let's do it and spin you out and maybe give you some money to market the thing, right? I mean, that would be the ideal situation for a startup, I would think.
Yeah. Well, and there are companies like that. They're just really rare, right? And we need more of that. Right. People who are just supporting our people to go for it, you know, go for it, think big. And oh, by the way, as an organization, you're going to flourish because of that, too, because they know they can take risk. They know they can challenge. They know their voice matters. And that's the kind of cultures we should be creating. Right. Approach them, you know, knock on the door and say, hey, I just have this conversation, have this that's going. And not only should they be doing it for you, but your kids or grandkids who are coming up with interesting ideas, you know, why not share that amongst your organization, right? Who's got a better mousetrap? Who's coming up with the latest, greatest innovations? And encourage your people to think that way. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, the Eureka Ranch helps people think like innovators, right? How do you become a better innovator? How do you get people inside your organization to think openly? You know, it takes a lot of work, but there's even organizations that's what they help you do.
So I told you we'd try to keep this to an hour because I know you got to be somewhere else. But what do you want to leave our listeners with? What would you say to the people out there who are maybe working in the corporate world or working any kind of 9-to-5, or maybe they're students and they've got an idea to do something and they want to get out there and it, or, you know, they just need to do a side hustle of some sort.
Yeah. So just a two things. One, you are the leader that you want to see, right? Too many of us are waiting for someone else to create the change. And if you have that desire and you've got that energy to do something and you want to see change created, be the one that creates it. Don't wait for other people. Those are the ones who are successful, are the ones who don't wait for others. Secondly, it's never too early to think about your impact on others, right? So culture starts today, helping people feel valued, heard, and understood, helping people understand that the impact that they can have in your organization or that they can have around you, like be a positive influence on those conversations, right? Don't try to squelch the ideas, bring out the ideas. And, you know, we see a lot of startups, unfortunately, wait too long to focus on the whole like leader, like you are leading, whether you're leading well or not, you should be figuring that out earlier than you are, right? Because you're going to burn through. I mean, we all know the startup space, a lot of people go through a lot of key hires before they ever figure out like they're the problem, not the people that they're bringing in. So it's never too early to think about your impact on others. And, you know, find an organization who can help you grow. That's what we do. But find an organization who can help you grow and look into your own leadership development. You're never too young as a high school student, right? So just a little background. Now I can't get any of my teachers in trouble because I'm 20 years out from school. But I started my lawn care company when I was in 11th grade at Holmes High School. And I had enough credits. And for some reason, teachers allow, I had a class that I took at the end of the day that was a volunteer class. So I would leave during that. I would go cut some yards. I'd show up back for baseball practice, pick up my buddies, and we'd head out, right? But I had already made like $115. And, you know, so I was hustling and teachers knew it. I was wired different, right? Sipple's just different. You always had a schedule 3 weeks out to get on my calendar because I always had something going on, right? Mm. But I, you know, I recently wrote about it in an article in Thrive Global. I mean, I had teachers who supported me in that, who saw this different character walking around, who was always trying to come up with new things to do. And, you know, and I wanted to launch a lawn care business. So I did it. I went to school for turf, grass, and lawn care management and somehow ended up in talent acquisition and organizational strategy. But that's another story. But like, you know, let's take those ideas and don't wait, right? Get the right people around you who are going to support your creativity and vision and go for it. Because life's too short. There's too much in your heart and your desire that you have. That if you wait, you're wasting time. Yeah. We don't have time.
How do people learn more about TMI?
So you can go to talentmagnet.com. I mentioned, we're going to hopefully put in the show notes, talentmagnet.com/trial. If you want to check out our platform, you can set up a trial account, $1 for 30-day trial.
Yeah, you've been very generous. I put that in the show notes. Yeah, so
appreciate that. And if you want to connect with me, I'm Mike Sipple, JR, on most social channels and platforms. You can also go to MikeSippleJr.com, MikeSippleJr.com, and check out some recent articles. And we try to keep that pretty current with things that we're doing and putting out into the world.
Love it.
Well, he forgot to add one thing.
What's that?
If you live in Cincinnati, vote Adam Kaler.
Oh, that's true.
That's right.
If you're in the city limits.
That's right, everyone.
You know how hard it is to get signatures from people who live in Cincinnati? And if you're not from Cincinnati, 30% of our city is in the state of Kentucky. There's some people that live in Indiana. And if you look at a map of Cincinnati, it looks like somebody shot it with a shotgun, because there's so many little townships and holes inside of the city. And people, you could go to a Kroger in the middle of Cincinnati and they'll be from Norwood Township or Norwood. It's a whole city. Or it'll be from like, you know, some Marymont or something like that. You know, sorry, I can't sign your petition. Can't sign your petition. So not only do I got to deal with that, I got to deal with COVID. People don't want to be near you. And then the 16 inches of snow or whatever in the world we just got out there in the last week or so.
But you know what? You never stopped hustling. You're still getting after it.
Yeah, so. My wife, I'm telling you, she supportive wife. She's out there every minute of it as much as she could.
The big winner out of this whole Adam Kaler running for a mayor thing is definitely Skyline. Because every single day is like $45 worth of food sitting on his table.
That's right. That's my celebratory meal.
Well, we know.
Anyway. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you being here, Mike, obviously. And I think a lot of people get a lot of stuff out of this.
Oh, I got a ton out of it. That was a really interesting conversation. Appreciate you coming.
Kyle's going to go back to TQL and sell them on some stuff.
Hey, they know me over there. I thank you both for the invitation. Thank you all for the community, too. Let's keep getting after it, making big things happen. Thank you for what you two are doing.
And next time they kick me out of Kroger, I'm going to have you make a call to the guy at number three.
Because he's going to text back right away.
Yeah.
I know now
they only allow the Salvation Army, the Boy Scouts, and the Girl Scouts to solicit out in the front. But I'm not soliciting anything. I'm trying to help. So I don't, whatever. I don't run Kroger, so
I know a few people that are going to use it the next time they get pulled over by a cop.
There you go. I know
I'm
Mike Sipple.
I'm not soliciting nothing. I'm just trying to help. This guy's got needs.
That's right. All right, everybody. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll be back next week.